This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. Last night, President Obama promised that the U.S. would take down the Islamic State group known as ISIS.
This is a core principle of my presidency. If you threaten America, you will find no safe haven.
And he came up with a plan that includes American airstrikes in Syria and the deployment of 475 more military advisors to Iraq. Former Marine Intelligence Officer Tim Nichols is among those who acknowledges the threat from ISIS, but he warns that the nature of the threat is becoming distorted by media coverage and political rhetoric. Lieutenant Colonel Tim Nichols served as an intelligence officer for more than 21 years. He's got experience in special operations and counterintelligence, including deployments in Iraq and Afghanistan, and led a joint interagency task force that tracked and targeted the migration of foreign extremists. Tim Nichols, welcome to the State of Things.
Thank you for having me, Frank.
In the essay that you co-wrote, you talked about the need to take a deep breath as we consider ISIS and the threat. What do you mean by that?
When you take a deep breath, you don't lurch into something that you regret. I think our history over the last decade has shown some decisions that perhaps we should have taken more time and caution to step into. So my advice to President Obama and his national security staff is, you know, let's evaluate this in context.
What is the context? How deep is the threat? The president obviously takes it very seriously and says we're going to eliminate ISIS.
Well, I think that the threat is not an existential threat to the United States. So perhaps there are some Americans there that could come back and cause problems. But put into context, we have a robust national security apparatus. We have the right type of federal authorities that are looking at this problem. So to say that if we don't destroy ISIS, that America, as we know it, is threatened, I think is an illogical argument.
You talked about not repeating some mistakes that we made in the past. What mistakes?
Well, one of the first mistakes that I think that we should be concerned with is addressing this problem as the United States is our sole problem. This problem requires an international response, and I commend President Obama for recognizing that last night. The coalition right now that he put together is very small, and I think part of it is because he simply hasn't had the time to build a stronger coalition. But let me make the point that I think there are two very positive things that came out of last night's speech. The first is the need for international solution. ISIS isn't the problem, Frank. This is a Middle East problem, and ISIS is a manifestation of that problem. So we will not be able to solve the Middle East problem without, to kind of use a colloquialism, skin in the game. There are a number of countries that really need to invest in the solution. The second point that I want to commend President Obama for is he has proven once again that he is a good steward of our national treasure, our resources and people. So he is a reluctant warrior, and for good reason. This is a very complicated problem, and he knows the cost, the time, the effort. And so what you saw last night was a cautious approach. He's ridiculed for being cautious, but in this case, I think cautious allows us time to think, put the threats in context, and then come up with a better approach to the problem.
Is he too cautious? Did he wait too long to address this problem?
He perhaps waited a little too long to address the problem. And the negative points that I would make about his speech last night is that his solution is not a feasible solution. The idea that he could use a strategic air campaign to destroy ISIS is simply an unacceptable military assessment. And if that is what his generals are telling him, then I don't think he's being served well.
Let's hear the president on that very point.
We will conduct a systematic campaign of airstrikes against these terrorists. Working with the Iraqi government, we will expand our efforts beyond protecting our own people and humanitarian missions so that we're hitting ISIL targets as Iraqi forces go on offense.
Now, it seems to me, certainly, strategic airstrikes worked for President Clinton in expelling the Serbs from Kosovo. Within 90 days, that was a military success. Why will it not work here, do you think?
Well, there are a number of differences on the ground, the first being that the ISIL fighters will go to the cities. They will go to the cities where the innocents are. So once we hit them in the open, they will move to places where the collateral damage is unacceptable. So they will hide among the innocents. They've proven to do this in the past. It's a very successful tactic. The second is that we don't have a mechanism for leverage like we did on the Serbian government. So in a centralized a conflict between two kind of perceivable nation states, you can put leverage against the centralized leadership. That's not really the case here. So bombing one Syria or one ISIL element north of Mosul will not affect the ISIL element that's out on the border with Syria. There's you know, that isn't the way that their structure is built.
The other part of that strategy is to, after American airstrikes or coalition, if he puts it together, we would allow Iraqi troops to come in and mop up. What about that part of the strategy? Because it seems those were the troops that allowed ISIL to be where it is today.
One of my biggest concerns is that now you're asking the Iraqi troops to be an offensive force. In some cases, the ISIL fighters moved through Iraqi battalions that we had trained and equipped. They moved through them like warm butter. And so to say that in a very short time, these battalions would be able to then take the offensive, which is much more tactically difficult, and mop up, I think is a stretch. And I don't think we're being completely candid about linking our strategic objectives with what is actually happening on the ground.
All right. Now let's step back, because you've talked about some of the strategic aspects of the talk last night and the strategy going forward. But let's get back to your essay and the idea that that the media in particular, and it's being picked up in sort of political rhetoric, is driving us to, in a sense, lose our minds about this and not be as thoughtful about ISIS. In what way do you think the threat is not real? What we know they're doing is pretty horrific. Why is it that we should not consider this an existential threat?
At the moment, it's a regional threat. They have mastered the idea of sensational media engagement. I mean, there's a fair amount of coverage in the press about how thoughtful they were in designing the beheading films and announcing that they're marrying off certain women in captured cities to ISIL fighters. I mean, those things really ping on the heartstrings of the American people. But to say that those types of activities convey to a broad threat against the United States and its existence, I disagree with that. One of the qualities that you have with this conflict is, number one, they're unable to mass. So they're not going to invade other countries in mass because the other countries have substantial defenses. Turkey, Israel, Jordan, they would be willing to – I mean, they could contend with an ISIL threat. They're regional vice global, and the external borders are legitimate, except for the border between Syria and Iraq, which I think has kind of dissolved.
Let's talk about the way this rhetoric works. The president, again, was very thoughtful in disaggregating, separating the idea of Islamic, which refers to religious principles, from this group that is acting well outside any of the norms of Islamic practice and Islamic teaching. And so he said, they are not Islamic and they are not a state. He was widely criticized in some quarters today for making that important distinction. Is this some sort of part of the rhetoric and how we're conflating this and building fear that might in some ways lead to a bad decision?
Yes, it is. And I think that represents one of the lessons our national security apparatus has learned, is that if you stigmatize a large group of people when really you're focusing on a much more narrow more narrow element, then you cause more damage than good. And so President Obama really tried to make that distinction last night. To his credit, President Bush also tried to make that distinction early in his administration, but it didn't – for whatever reason, it didn't gain any traction. And I commend Obama for doing that last night and trying to identify who ISIS is and who ISIL is. And I would say that it's an aggregation of foreign fighters which we've already heard about. It's a number of core extremists who have moved between Iraq and Syria. It is a small criminal element. There's definitely some opportunism that's associated with ISIS. And what I consider the largest part of it's a bunch of late joiners, a bunch of people that want to join the winning side. So if you were a member of the Iraqi army and you were a Sunni and your boss was replaced by a Shia and he said that you won't be part of the unit anymore, that you'll be discriminated against, then you say, well, my only choice is to join ISIS because then I can have the legitimacy or the support and acknowledgement that I need.
You said you were worried the president was not getting good military advice. If the president gave you only 30 seconds to give him good advice, what would it be?
I would say, Mr. President, we have to underwrite this effort, but we cannot solve it with the military tactics that you've suggested, and we should not take anything off the table.
And what would that mean, though? How would we engage, and is there a military component to this, and what would it be?
So, Frank, I think that when you have a conflict that you're willing to put pilots in harm's way, then you also have to be willing to rescue those pilots. Or if opportunities present themselves where the introduction of ground forces, say a large unit out in the open that you could capture or surround, then that should not be written off the table. But there's risk associated with that.
Lieutenant Colonel Tim Nichols, a former intelligence officer with the U.S. Marines. Thank you, Tim.
Thank you for having me.
A link to his piece can be found at our website, stateofthings.org. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Just ahead, a local photographer reclaims the pinup to help women appreciate their own body image. Stay tuned.